Good morning, everybody. It is a pleasure to be with you this morning. If you're a guest with us, I'd especially like to welcome you. I hope that you find Crossbridge welcoming. I hope that as you approach the doors today, you were greeted with a handshake, a smile. I hope you got here early enough for a good cup of coffee. If you missed it, you got to get here earlier. But we will brew more next week, I promise. But we're really happy that you're here. At Crossbridge, our hope and our desire for you as a guest, for you as someone who maybe attends more regularly, and for all those who are watching online, is that regardless of where you are in your faith, that you would take one step closer to Jesus. That's all we hope for here at Crossbridge, is just one step for each person today. We are officially halfway through our Emoji Jesus series, and it's been a great series where we're talking a lot about the emotions that Jesus had, what emotions we have, and what do we do with them. And so now that we're halfway through, I am kind of excited because I'm much more in my element today, being that I get to wear a nice black V-neck shirt, which is kind of my uniform for every day, as opposed to some bright shirt with like a grinning Jesus at you, which really felt awkward walking around the hallways. But this Jesus picture, this Jesus emoji, didn't feel that much less awkward because it felt like everybody was coming up to me like, "Oh, are you okay?" And I'm like, "No, it's Jesus, not me." So if you were to look at this emoji, what emotion are we hitting today? Sad. Everybody says sad. Today we will talk about sorrow. We'll talk about sorrow. Has anyone here ever experienced sorrow before in their life? Okay, awesome. If you didn't raise your hand, you're either unaware or you're lying. You have. We all have. We all experience sorrow on some way, shape, or form. And it's rooted, you know, sorrow has its roots in loss. Whenever we experience loss, we experience sorrow. And last week after church, we broke down, and I got a text from a great friend inviting me over to his house to watch the Giants-Eagles game. And I thought, oh, as a Giants fan, this will be a lot of fun to hang out with my friends who are Eagles fans to watch a team that's horrible, the Giants, and this will be fun. And so we sat and we watched this game, and my expectations are here as a Giants fan right now. They're not anywhere. It's great. It was really easy. And so for three quarters, I was like, all right, they stink. This is what it is. But something happened in the fourth quarter to the Giants. They got lucky, and they started to do well. And by the end of the fourth quarter, I'm kind of engaged. They came alive, and I'm like, there's a shot. We might win something. It only takes a second. In that stupid game, and I say stupid because that's the way I really feel. In that stupid game, in the last second, a no-name kicker that no one knows up to this point. You all know his name now, and you're like, he's a hero. No, he's nobody. And he kicks 61 yards to end the game with my guys losing, your guys winning, and, you know, thank you, Mimi, for appreciating that right when you came in. You're like, hey, God's on our side. you know, he's a miracle worker. And so I sat in this couch with Eagles fans cheering and jeering, and I have my hands on my face just thinking, we lost again. And in that moment, I experienced sorrow. It's attached to loss. But because of where I was, and because I knew what I was preaching on this week, I stopped for a second. I was like, man, we experience loss everywhere. I mean, this is a stupid football game that I have no control over, but I'm still passionate about. How many more things do we experience loss in every single day? And loss comes in waves. It comes in mega moments, and it comes in little things. You know, just this month, I have had two friends, very close friends, lose parents. That loss hurts. You know, this month, we've had people at Crossbridge who have lost pets, and some of you may be like, it's a pet. You don't understand, that's a big thing, especially when you have kids in the house, that's a huge deal. That's loss, that's sorrow. We've seen people lose jobs with no warning in our church. We've seen people asked to leave their house and move somewhere else with no warning. Those are loss, and in that loss, you experience sorrow. We've seen marriages in our church and in our community right now that no one expected to lose. No one said I do years ago thinking they'd be in the place now where that's a lost relationship. Expectations with kids that you thought would be something and now they're not. And there's loss in those moments. Maybe you're at a place right now where you're like, well, I haven't experienced any of those things. just turn your computer on and look online. Losses all around us. We've got hurricanes that have decimated Houston, Florida, Puerto Rico is on the verge of not existing if we don't step in and do something. You want to talk about loss? Loss is there. What about in India, where thousands upon thousands of people have died because of flooding? That's loss. And in loss, there is sorrow. And so, as I've sat this week thinking about sorrow, I've thought about those ones that really get you. You know the losses. I'm going to assume that you're a better person than I am. Because this week I have sat and I have thought with some sorrow and some loss in my life, God, what the heck, man? Why would you allow this to happen right now? Like, why did you not step in and intervene in this area? And now I feel like I've lost again. Don't you even care about the situation that I'm in? Don't you even care? If you're really in control, you could have stopped it. Maybe you've not thought that this week. But in my journal and in my prayer time, that's your pastor's prayer. God, why didn't you step in? And in those moments, I've stared at this shirt that's hanging up by my office. And it's creepy when you look up and you see a weepy Jesus staring at you and you're like, ah. You know what? The encouragement for me today is I'm not the only one who experienced loss and sorrow. And neither are you. Because we have a God in Jesus Christ who experienced sorrow. He experienced loss. And so this morning what I'd love to do is look at how Jesus handles the sorrow in his life. Look how he interacts with those around him who have sorrow. And then ask ourselves the question, what do we do with it? How do we handle this loss in our life? What do we do? So that's where we're going to go today. And I'm going to ask, if you would, if you have a Bible with you, we're going to be in John chapter 11. John chapter 11 will be about 3/4 of the way through your Bible. In the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, then John. If you don't have a Bible, we'd be more than happy to give it to you. If you have it on your phone, again, 3/4 of the way down. And as you're turning there, I just kind of want to set this up for you a little bit. Jesus is highly relational, so he is always around people. People are always around him, not just the 12 disciples, but tons of people. And in the scope of Jesus' ministry, you know, not everybody is the same. And so he actually has some people that he connects with a little better. And there happens to be this family that he connects with. And for our purposes this morning, the three people in that family that he's going to connect with that's important for us are Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, they live in Bethany, which is just a little bit east of Jerusalem. And it's about 2 miles off of there. And in Bethany, there's this great connection that he loves this family. When he travels through the area, he stays with this family. He connects with this family. And Mary, Martha, and Lazarus are super tight with Jesus. They're all friends. They're all connected. Well, something happens to Lazarus, and he gets sick. When he gets sick and seriously sick, Jesus happens to be about 2 days away in this region that you see where it says Jesus is teaching in this area. Try to make it easy for you so you know what we're talking about. All right, so Jesus is out in this area. Lazarus is sick over in this area, and word comes to Jesus, your friend, one of your best friends, is sick. And Jesus looks at his disciples who are all like, well, let's go. And he says, no, we're going to stay here for a second. This is a whole different message for a whole different time on why Jesus stays. But for today, you just need to know he doesn't go right away. A couple days pass, and he decides it's time to go. And so he works his way towards Bethany, and this is where we're going to pick it up in verse 17 of chapter 11. Verse 17, it says this. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. So what do we know about Lazarus already? He died. In that time that Jesus waited, Lazarus died. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and to Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. So Jesus gets close to this town, and as he's approaching the town, he finds out Lazarus is dead. He finds out that his friend is no longer living and has died a couple of days ago. And there are people all over who know Jesus, right? They know Jesus in this area because he stays with this family. He knows this family, and now he's in the position where they're probably asking the same question you and I are. Why didn't you show up? Why would you wait when you know you could heal him? You've healed people all over this region, and you didn't show up. Why not? You may think it's a stretch and like, no one's going to ask that of Jesus. Please, we ask this every day of Jesus. Why didn't you show up? And here's what's amazing about Jesus in this moment, right? He just finds out his best friend's dead. Do you think he's experiencing loss at this moment? Yes, we have a sorrowful Jesus right now. And as he's away from the city of Bethany, he's approached by Martha first. And what we're going to see is, how does Jesus handle his sorrow, and how does he handle the sorrow of these two sisters, of the best friend that he just lost? Let's look at them individually. Martha is first to meet Jesus while Mary's at home. And it says this, starting in verse 21. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." So Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day." And so Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world." After she said this, she went back and she called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and he's asking for you." Mary and Martha, if you have been in the church culture for a while, they always get compared, contrasted. And Martha is a woman who constantly gets thrown under the bus as like, "Don't be a Martha." I connect with Martha really, really well. I get her on so many levels when I read the Bible. She's a person, a character that I just understand, because there's different ways that we can approach sorrow and pain. And we have to understand there's a different approach that we can all take. And maybe you take a combination of them, but there's a logical approach to sorrow. Okay, a logical approach. This is people who don't necessarily, when something happens, they begin to lose it. They become very analytical and rational through loss. Are there any logical people in the room besides myself that this is how you handle loss? Okay, cool. This is not a bad thing. I have to say that out loud, because those around you who are kind of emotional are like, "They're horrible. They have no heart. They care little. You don't have any feels," right? That's what they think. That's not true. For those of us who are more logical in the way we approach loss, we just see things more rationally. That's not wrong. It's just a way to approach loss. Martha is a logical person. So when she approaches Jesus, she doesn't approach Jesus highly emotional going, "Ah!" She's like, "Listen, logically, if you were here, he wouldn't have died. And I know that because you healed, you healed, you healed. I've seen it. You've done this miracle, that miracle, this. Logically, you show up, he lives, happy family. That's the deal." Because you could have come in, and at your word, he would have lived. I mean, that's a logical approach, isn't it? I get her when she says that. I approach Jesus like this. But instead, what does Jesus do? No, she said, you waited, and now he's dead. What I like, though, is she logically walks herself from, if he showed up, he'd have lived. However, logically, I also recognize you are the Messiah. You are the Son of God, and because you are the Son of God, in the position that you hold, you can ask God for anything, and he will give it to you. To which Jesus, how does he respond to her? In his sorrow, does he yell at her? Does he scream at her? Does he tell her, "You have no feels. You need to feel this"? No, Jesus approaches her on a very logical approach. And he says, your brother will rise again. That's his response. Your brother will rise again. Now, this wouldn't have been uncommon for her to hear, because in the Jewish faith, they believe in what's called the Great Resurrection, when all the bodies will be resurrected of all those in the faith. And so she gets that. Jesus meets her on a logical level. She thinks he's just talking about the Great Resurrection. We know that he's not. We know the end of this story and the resurrection that happens physically in this moment. She doesn't know that. But Jesus meets her logically where she's at. He'll rise again. To which she responds, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I get it. I understand. There is the logic. Anyone who believes in Jesus will live. And so she takes it to the next degree. I get that you're the Messiah. I recognize you in the midst of my pain right now. And Jesus reminds her, if you believe in me, you will live. Anyone who trusts in me will live. When we're in the midst of pain and suffering, whether it's our fault, someone else's fault, we can get these blinders on us that kind of turn us this way. Everything becomes much smaller. And all of the world that's happening out here, all of the pieces that really play a part in the whole story of loss for us, they disappear with blinders. And so Martha is approaching Jesus with blinders, saying, if you were here, he would have lived. And Jesus' response is, he will live. And so it brings her eyes up. It starts to remove the blinders because she approaches him with a logic that if you had shown up, something would have changed. And he says, it will. It will change. And so part of Jesus meeting Martha is removing the blinders. And so many of us, when we get hit with those crappy situations that put us in places where everything comes into question, Jesus isn't going to sit there and pick us apart and tell us how we're wrong. He starts to remove the blinders to help us recognize there's more to this than you recognize. And the more that you need to recognize right now is me. I'm in this with you. You're not alone. I'm with you. I hear you. And this is really important for us to understand. Those of you who are going to be a little emotional here right now, emotional people, listen. Okay, I'm going to make this as easy as I can. If you are friends with a logical person, you have to hear them. You have to hear them. You can't say to them, you don't care. Because that's not true. Logical people do care. They just care differently. They just feel differently. And so the best gift that you could give someone, if they are a logical person and you tend to be the more emotional person, you have to hear them out. You have to listen. And I know that's going to kill you. And you're like, but I don't want to listen. I want to cry. I get it. My wife and I fall on both sides of these camps. I'll let you guess which one I am and she is. There are times when loss comes into our home and I need her just to hear me. And she'll say, do you need a hug? And I'm like, no, I need you to listen. That doesn't compute. It doesn't compute all the time because it's not the way that she's wired, but it's the way that I'm wired. So if you fall in that camp, you have to listen to the logical people. It will make them feel better. See, I used your language. They'll feel better if you listen. You have to. Martha, in this moment, feels listened to. Right? Jesus goes back, he listens, and what is her response? You can cheat and use your Bibles. What does Martha do after Jesus responds to her? She hears. What's her next step? She goes back to Mary. You see, when you are heard, you go back and you want others who need to be heard to be heard. And she goes and she's like, Mary, Mary, the teacher's looking for you. Did he say that? No. No, but logically she knows you need to get over there. How does Jesus handle this? Does he go after Martha? Does he go after Mary? Listen to him and how he responds to this. Starting in verse 29, let's look at Mary. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly, and she went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha met him. He didn't go, right? When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." It's a little bit different, isn't it? When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. And Jesus wept. And then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." See, Martha's response is completely different than Mary's response to sorrow, isn't it? Martha's going to approach this from a logical standpoint, and Jesus meets her there. But then there's this camp of people who respond to things a little more emotionally, or a lot more emotionally. And if you tend to be this emotional type person, God has wired you this way. This is not wrong. It is not bad. You're not a big fat baby. Okay, because some of us logical people will say things, and I apologize because we say stupid things like, "Well, just pull up your big girl or your, you know, big boy pants and get on with it. Like, suck it up and move on, buttercup. Life goes on." Do you like hearing that as emotional people? Do you want to throat punch logical people when they say that? Yes, you do. Quite hard to be like, your best bet is to shut your mouth. When I get logical in my family, and my wife says, "Stop," I'm like, "Oh, you get it?" And she's like, "I just want a hug." And I'm like, "That doesn't fix anything. That does nothing." Can I tell you it fixes? Because she feels heard. Not in the way that says I'm listening, but a way that says I care. When Mary approaches Jesus, what does she say to Jesus? You could cheat. Come on. What does she say? She says the same exact thing Martha says. Almost word for word, doesn't she? She says the same thing. "If you were here, my brother wouldn't have died." Now, because there's emotion behind it, it sounds like she's blaming him, doesn't it? It does. I feel this with Jesus sometimes as well. And I get emotional with Jesus. If you really cared, if you really are who you say you are, something would have been different. Something would have changed. You must not be as loving because my brother's dead. That's what she's feeling. So should Jesus logically approach her and say, "Well, don't worry, your brother will rise again"? No, Jesus is, you know, I think if Jesus says that, Mary's like, "Thank you." You know, this Jesus face would look a little different. You see, when someone approaches Jesus emotionally, he doesn't hit it logically and go, "Well, ABC, and you'll be fine." Because that's not where they are. That's not what they need. What they need in the moment of emotion is to be heard with emotion. And so what does it tell us that Jesus does to respond? He doesn't say anything to begin with, does he? Because words won't fix that pain. What fixes that pain is that Jesus is moved deep in his soul. There's something in the innermost parts of who he is that is moved with her and moved with the people who are around, who see the pain, who are all emotional in that moment. And Jesus' only response is, "Where is he? Where is he?" He is moved. And then the two words in verse 35 jump off the page, because a lot of times we look at it and verse 35 becomes trivia of, "Well, Jesus wept. That's the shortest verse, blah, blah, blah." No, 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 you don't get it. In this context, Jesus is so moved by Mary's emotion, he can no longer control the emotion of sorrow. And I think the mingling of his own sorrow of his best friend, he sees Martha, who feels heard, knows that she's cared for, and has a weeping on the ground, the snotty cry, horrible crying Mary in front of him. And instead of saying, "Suck it up," he weeps with her. When you are an emotional person, and logical people, listen to me clearly. I'm going to make this as easy as I can. I get you. Shut up. When you are with someone who's got the feels and they start to weep, or they start to get angry, or they start to feel something, do not logically talk to them through why they're feeling what they're feeling. When someone's angry, step into that anger with them. If it's your spouse and they are weepy, you step into the weepy and you're like, but I can't like fake cry. I'm not asking you to fake cry. I'm asking you to shut your mouth and to listen. I'm asking you to put a hand on a hand. I'm asking you to look into eyes. I'm asking you to feel without words, because words make sense to us, but they don't make sense to someone in a Mary approach. Jesus doesn't use them. He uses his emotions. You could be logical. You could be emotional. You could fall somewhere in between. But the truth is, it doesn't matter, because God's wired you that way. And so we need to stop looking at one another and thinking the way that you approach sorrow is wrong. You should think like me. It doesn't work that way. You have been wired to be you. And I need to tell you that God meets you where you are. And the thing that most of us want when we're in a sorrow position, the thing that we most want is to be heard. In whatever language it is that you speak, we want to be heard. And that's where Jesus is. And the way that Mary hears Jesus is he wept. This doesn't make him a baby. This doesn't make him spineless. This doesn't mean he didn't have the right answers. This simply means he felt and he heard. I like what pastor and theologian Tim Keller says. It's a great tweet that came through this week, and I'm like, I'm bookmarking that baby. He says, we're called not to waste our sorrows, but to grow through them into grace and glory. In our culture, we rush through sorrow. We do not like pain, and we push it aside and say, let's get done with this as quickly as possible so that we can move on to what's next. Jesus doesn't push through the pain to get to what's next with Mary and Martha or with himself. He kind of camps in it. He doesn't rush after Mary and Martha, does he? He waits for Mary and Martha to come to him. Jesus is never going to enter your pain if you don't invite him to. He's not afraid of it. It's not overwhelming for him. It's not scary for him. He understands. And for us this morning, I believe we need to hear that we need to invite Jesus into our pain. And he will come in, and he weeps with those who weeps. And it's a logical approach to those who are logical. It makes me wonder in this context, if we're supposed to walk through that, maybe our pain and sorrow isn't misplaced. Maybe our pain and sorrow, there's a place for it in that it helps us identify with Jesus, right? If we can feel this and Jesus felt this, then we can feel and understand Jesus a little more. We can identify with a Savior who has conquered death and say, if you can walk through this, I can too. If you wept because of this, I can too. I wonder if experiencing pain and sorrow and loss not only helps us identify with Jesus, but it allows us to see our lives conformed more to the image of Christ for the sake of those around us who experience pain. And maybe, just maybe, when those who don't know Jesus experience pain in their life, they don't get correct answers all the time from people who think they know it, but they experience the love of Jesus from people who walk with them, like Jesus walked with Mary and Martha. That's what I'm asking, is for you to enter into your pain, is for you to enter into your sorrow so that you may look like Jesus, so other people who don't know Jesus would experience the love that he brings, the understanding that he brings, and in doing so, they would say, there's something different about you, and we get to say, it's because Jesus has met me, he can meet you. You can't ever take someone to a place you haven't gone to. Has Jesus entered your pain? No more saying, just get through it. It's time to stop and to be with each other. Jesus responds at the end here. At the tomb, it says this, starting in verse 38. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he says. But Lord, said Martha. Martha's our which one? She's logical. So she says, but Lord, the sister of the dead man said, by this time, there's a bad odor. He's been in there for days. Like, Jesus, I don't know if you know how decomposition works, but after 4 days, he stinks. Like, this is, you do not want to open that. It's bad. But that's what he says. And then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? Did I not tell you what was going to happen? So they took away the stone, and then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have what? Heard me. What is Jesus most thankful for in his sorrow? That the Father has heard him. I need to explain to you and help you understand that sorrow and pain and loss unattended to sucks and it stinks. It stinks, and that odor and that pain affects so many people around you that you're thinking, I can't open this tomb. If I roll away and enter into this loss, it's going to affect a whole lot. I need to tell you, it already is. It already is. So all we're asking and all I'm asking you to do is to say, Jesus, if I open this tomb of pain, if I open this tomb of loss that I'm not happy with right now, what are you going to do? And I believe he brings life to that. He doesn't make it easier. He doesn't make it better. But he uses it to conform you and I into his image for the sake of others. And Jesus in his pain has one thing to be thankful for. In verse 41, thank you that I am heard. Maybe this morning you feel unheard by God. Maybe your times of prayer, your times of dealing with pain, you feel as though those prayers are bouncing off the ceiling and you're saying, God, why haven't you heard? He has heard. He does care. However you have been wired, emotionally, logically, or somewhere in the middle, have you approached God that way? Or have you tried to pretty it up with him? Have you tried to say, well, God, I trust you completely. I hate you, but it's good. I trust you. Doesn't work that way. Sometimes you need the Mary prayer. The Mary prayer, if you really showed up, the ones where you grit your teeth and you give it to God, he's big enough to handle that prayer, but you've got to open the tomb or he can't go in. You've got to enter into the pain and into the loss or he can't bring life. So where are you today? As our music team comes up to close us out, where are you when it comes to handling pain? Do you run from it thinking, God, if I don't approach this, it'll all just go away? It's not going to. And I want to tell you here at Crossbridge, it's a messy place where your pain is allowed. It doesn't have to be pretty because it never is. But we wholeheartedly believe that Jesus Christ is the giver of life, that he has conquered death so that he could bring life to you and to me, to live a life that we could no longer live on our own, to have the victory to enter into a pain that everyone else is going to say, avoid it because it'll cripple you. And he says, I can use this for my glory and to make you a better person who's going to love people deeper because they need it too. That process is long, but it is worth it. And so this morning as we close, normally, if you attend Crossbridge regularly, you know this is when we give back to God and we take the offering and all of that stuff. We're not going to do that today. If you feel led to give to what God is doing in the midst of this church, the baskets are in the back. Just have at it. Do your thing. But today I really feel like, and I talked to Will about it, we want to give you space just to pray. Pray your Martha prayers. If you want to throat punch me right now because you're the emotional person who's like, I hate you because I'm ready to cry. It's bubbling up. It's okay. Don't hit me, but it's okay. Take your time to pray. And if it gets ugly prayer, that's okay. You're fine. take some time. Listen to the song and let it wash over you. Let there be a moment of prayer in just you and Jesus. Let me pray for you. God, I can